I thought this whole medical marijuana thing was just a bunch of hippies trying to get stoned. I honestly believe that. I was entirely wrong. At that point, I said, what can I do in this industry? And I had a bunch of friends who wanted some dispensary licenses. So I moved back. I moved from Tucson to Phoenix and started to network, started to get involved with the dispensary owners. Immediately found a role for myself as a lobbyist, as a regulatory specialist, as somebody who can identify change, understand ordinances, work with government officials, and help educate. So I'm kind of an advocate of sorts. I'm an organizer of sorts. I have a lot of projects going on. I run the Arizona Marijuana Industry Trade Association. We put together this expo, a bunch of other things. You know, you have plenty of time to talk to me over the weekend about all that good stuff. So then from August 8, 2012 up until now, I've been involved in so many different things in the industry. Prop 205 was written in January, between January 2015 and April 2015. I'll get into Prop 205 in a second. So, just trying to sort through things here. So, what happened was after I got involved in the industry, became an ordinance regulatory specialist and lobbyist, I woke up at 4 a.m. today. That's basically how I made a living in this industry the last 4 years. And we can get into more of that. But I want to introduce two individuals that I brought today, a little special treat. Because I think most of you are here to figure out, how do I get involved in this industry? How do I become an entrepreneur? How do I become a worker? How do people get involved? So I brought Jen Goat here. She has a great story. And she's going to tell you real quickly for 5 minutes her story about how she got involved in the Arizona industry and who she is and where she came from. And you will be finding her on the expo floor all weekend. This is an example.
Good morning. How's everyone?
Good.
I'm so excited to be here. I've got kind of a unique story. 6 years ago, I moved here from the Philadelphia area to Arizona. Jesus Sunshine. It's beautiful. And then I found myself breaking up with my partner, having 4 children, being a single mom, and I needed a job. I didn't even know marijuana was medicinal here. A friend of mine came up to me and he said, hey, do you want to drink wine? And I looked at him and I go, are you serious? Sure, why not? I need a job. So I started out as a trimmer, sitting on a bucket with a little table, trimming about 10 hours a day, and then everything went through. Every time I had the opportunity, I jumped in there. I would work long, long days and be the first time I ever walked into the lead. Eventually, somebody noticed. And they came to me and they said, hey, look, do you want to run this place? And I was like, absolutely. You know, it was the best thing ever. So out of 35,000 square foot facility that I ran, we had 750 lights and 8,500 plants. We had 4 dispensaries that we solely stocked ourselves. There was flour, shake, pre-rolls. And then we also did wholesale. Out of here. We had about 30 wholesale customers, which was big at the time. So, you know, I'm really lucky and blessed to have had fallen into this, you know. And the advice that I can give to you guys is it might not be your ideal position to start, to get in. Just get in any way you can. It was a gold rush, pretty much, you know. So, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to stop me. I won't stop you.
I want to introduce you to Lilac. We're very privileged to have her here. She's the owner, one of the owners of the Giving Tree Dispensaries, 2 dispensaries here in Phoenix.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lilac Power. I have 2 dispensary locations, 1 commercial cultivation, and we also we opened about 3.5 years ago, so very much in the beginning in the industry in Arizona. And this industry has been amazing. It's, I always say it's never boring. So if you grow up for it, you're in the right room. How did I get into this? So my business partner and I were working on a different business, which included a lot of alternative therapy. And once we got into the business model, we work. So we to do other things. And then this proposition came on in 2010, and wanting, and she called me. She's like, "No, I know how we're going to do this. Turn on the radio." So I turn on the radio, and I'm like, "They're talking about marijuana." She's like, "Yes." So I think about it, I'm like, "Yes. This is it. We're going to, it's a non-profit model, and this is how we're going to be able to offer all the things we want to offer to patients." She was an ear doctor, so she are getting to the end of what we can do for them. So why don't you try yoga? Why don't you try acupuncture? Why don't you try cannabis? So we opened a wellness center that offers all that, you know, support groups and yoga and acupuncture and massage. And then we also have patient consultants that offer free consultation for anyone that wants to just have questions. So many people don't know, what is this industry? How do I do it? How do I get a card or what conditions? Or how do I start?
In Arizona, we have something called the Voter Protection Act. So, in November 2010, the initiative was passed by the voters. The Voter Protection Act says that the government can't change it. They can't reverse the will intent of the act. It can alter it with 75% consent from the House, the Senate, the approval of the governor, and the approval of the courts. I think you guys know Arizona politics. That just doesn't happen. So, our Arizona Medical Marijuana Act is here to stay. Our industry is here to stay. It is one of the safest industries to get involved in the country because of the way that our Voter Protection Act is structured. It could be reversed in other states. Sure, we don't really see that happening. But in Arizona, it's very, very unlikely to get reversed unless there's another vote by the voters. But that also creates problems. Because when the MPP wrote their initiative in 2009, they aren't experts in pursuing the legalization of marijuana. They are not experts in structuring economic regulatory reality for businesses. So what happened is after the initiative was passed in November of 2010, in January 2011, the government was required to implement it. So they threw it into the Department of Health Services, and they created a regulatory structure for the Arizona medical marijuana industry. That, from January 2011, that wasn't actually implemented until August 2012. That regulatory structure, unfortunately, can be changed very easily without the legislature and the governor actually looking at it, reviewing it, thinking through it, analyzing it, and improving it. They can't. What's the opposite of improving? They can't go back, but they can improve it. So We have an Arizona medical marijuana system in place. August 8, 2012, it's implemented. 99 of the 131 available licenses get issued. I can get into how those licenses are. So little tidbit. In the Arizona Medical Marijuana Act, it says that there's one license for every 10 pharmacies in Arizona. So there's 1,300 pharmacies approximately in Arizona. So there's 130 licenses available. That's the way the government determines how many dispensary licenses are available. In Arizona, the dispensary licenses are when you get a dispensary license, you get a license to dispense, you get a license to infuse, you get a license to cultivate. It's vertically integrated, but the cultivation and the infusions and the dispensaries can wholesale to each other. So it's a little subtle subtlety. I'll be glad to share that at any time grab this weekend. I'll explain to you further how that works. But just want to get back into a little of the time frame as to what is going on, what's going to happen. So after the licenses were issued on August 8, 2012, the 99 licenses were issued, the dispensaries started opening. First dispensary opened in December 2013. Since then, during December 2014, all the other dispensaries started opening, right? Then what happened was the MPP, for some reason, the National Advocacy Group, decided that they wanted to pursue an adult use marijuana policy in Arizona in November 8, 2016. So there's a lot of this was at the end of 2014. So because they recognized that there was an existing industry, they worked with the industry and other local advocacy groups to come up with a structure for a proposition, people like me, for a proposition that would eventually regulate the adult use market. So that eventually, in April 2015, when it was finally drafted, that eventually became Proposition 205. So Proposition 205 is a regulatory structure for the adult use market. And you can see I call it the Colorado problem, I call it the Washington problem, which a lot of people don't talk about. Eventually somebody's going to write a PhD about this, a dissertation. It's not very often that somebody comes into the state or the government and takes an action to change the entire regulatory structure that exists to sell a commodity or service. And when you go from medicinal marijuana state to recreational marijuana state, that's the campaign license adult use, it's still called recreational. That is what is happening. And that is a unique thing that is occurring in the state of Arizona. And you saw the list earlier of states that are medicinal now. Eventually that's nuance that can happen in all the states. You know, so this is kind of where I have a specialty in, and we go through all the little nuances of that later on. But so Prop 205 was written to create an adult use regulatory structure. So if you plan on getting involved in Prop 205 passes, I would suggest reading Prop 205 really closely, because there is so much opportunity in there. We slipped hemp into Prop 205, and the hemp regulatory possibilities commercial possibilities are endless. You know, they're tremendous in Arizona. Nobody's even talking about whether it's going to go to adult use. But so if Prop 205 passes, we'll shift from the existing medicinal market, which I'll get back to a little more about the structure in a second. We'll shift from the existing medicinal marijuana market into the Prop 205 adult use market. And that is going to create a tremendous amount of opportunities. There is a provision in there where the dispensaries are grandfathered in. There's some people who are negative about that. Oh, why are the dispensaries being licensed? Well, you know, they built this industry. They've invested a lot of money here. And imagine if you owned a dispensary and somebody came in and said, we're going to throw out your regulatory model. We're going to do an entire regulatory model to sell the exact same commodity that you're selling right now. And we're going to have a new regulatory body and everything. And you guys aren't going to be allowed to do it. You know, but just being said, you like a real estate agent, that there's something new real estate agency, you know, accreditation system. You'd be like, what? compromise was made to grandfather the dispensaries in, which we think is a reasonable compromise. And what's going to happen at that point is the state of Arizona is going to have a chance. There's going to be a commission of seven individuals created. The state of Arizona is going to have a chance to determine how the rest of the licensing works and how many more get issued. So I would pay close attention to that, because one of the biggest things that's going to happen is right now it's vertically integrated. It's going to get split. It's going to get expanded. There's all these different tiers of licensing, edible lines, infusion things, laboratory things, dispensary things. There's all these different opportunities that are going to be created in Prop 205 pass. Does anybody have any questions? I mean, any time to stop me and say, I'm a little lost. Grandfathered in for top tier cultivation. Yes, well, and that's where it's going to get into a lot of nuances. There's going to be an entire new regulatory commission created to decide what all those licenses look like. And no one knows for sure. But it's something that if you're going to be involved in the industry, or if you're involved in the industry now, the current medical marijuana industry, shifting to the adult use marijuana industry, Prop 205, you have to pay close attention to it. And pay close attention to the meetings that are held, pay close attention to the appointment process, go to the public meetings that are set up for the recreational board should it pass, because that's where information is going to be disseminated and the decisions that the government makes, that the board makes, are going to be debated. So those tiers, are very important. It hasn't been created yet, but right now in Arizona, every dispensary has a dispensary license, retail location, infusion location. They can infuse products. They can either infuse at their dispensary location or at their cultivation location. Every one license has dispensaries, but they also have a cultivation. So that's the way it works right now. And that cultivation can sell to all the different dispensaries across the state. So as you can imagine, every single one has this great wholesale model. But there hasn't been the investment capital to get a giant operation going. When it shifts into adult use, as he was saying, one of the compromises was a whole bunch of tiers. So the dispensaries are automatically going to be grandfathered in, because right now they have that higher tier. They already have it. Unlimited growth for dispensaries exists. So there will be 131 unlimited grow licenses that are given to the dispensaries, they're just transitioning over. And then a whole bunch more tiers will be created and be handed out. And that gets into a lot of laid out who gets on that commission and how they see economics, liberty, how they see regulatory structures, how they see licenses, how many they think should be issued. So that's very important stuff. That's actually who gets on the commission. So they pay close attention to that process. I'll tell you, nobody knows. And there's one line about hemp in our initiative. It's a 37-page initiative. So what you want to do is you want to explore research how hemp is regulated. Or dream up to regulate hemp. I don't know about the hemp plant, and I might be sitting on that commission. I'll tell you, there might be seven other guys sitting on the commission that are just establishment government bureaucrats that don't know anything about the marijuana industry. They might be sitting on the commission. So you show up for them at a public hearing and say, tell you what I know about hemp. Let me tell you how I think hemp should be regulated for the best result for me or for the state of Arizona or whatever your agenda is. You tell the commission how you think hemp should be regulated. Hopefully they'll listen. They have no idea. This is entirely wide open. But I love the hemp possibilities. If I could have had my brothers, be a one sentence initiative that said marijuana should be legal in the state of Arizona. And then the state legislature should enact the will of the people. But that's just not a reality. You know, we're barely getting them after. Since 2010, the voter initiative that I talked about, how it's hard to change them. So since January 1st, 2011 was the first time that the legislature touched it. There's been no changes in 5 years. I mean, we're altering liquor laws still, you know, yearly. But there's been no changes because it's impossible to change these things. And that's why we had to add 37 pages of stuff to force the legislature to actually do things. Because if we would have made it simple, like we did for hemp, they wouldn't have. They would just try to figure out a way to try to roadblock the whole thing.
So, you're very little people about it.
No, that's what it said. I'm not even start growing the day that it gets passed. That's a question asking. Print out the initiative run by me. Let's look through it because I think, you know, when I look at it again, it might be that the hemp is not even going to be regulated by that commission the way that it's written. And that means hemp would just be legal to anybody do it if they want to, like tomatoes. And I think that might be the case. But again, I was one of the 18 people that was part of the drafting process, and we have 18 people drafting. I'm looking for a partner in the hemp business, so don't let me take that idea. There's so much out there, but hemp is really cool, it's really trendy, really good. But I love to use, I do a lot of yoga, so I love to use metaphors. So you know, the law, the initiative is like steel frames of a building, right? But imagine if you had a skyscraper with just steel frames. That's what we have with the AMMA, that's what we have with the 205. Everything else, as she was saying, is determined by the regulatory commission or by the administrative agency or by executive rules. And those are subject to quick change and public opinion and public input. So there's tremendous opportunity. And we should remind you of that post-Prop 205 hopefully will pass. We'll get on that. Because I really want to do it. Yeah. was 99 kind of so deep in this process. So the state of Arizona was required to issue one for every 10 pharmacies, 130 dispensaries, 130 licenses, right? They could issue up to 130 licenses. So it's going to DHS. So everybody thinks of big conspiracy and stuff. The way things happen is incredibly complex. Sometimes kind of like DHS was charged with implementing the medical marijuana program. So DHS is like, well, should we do it? One per county, population base, should we do, one for each city? Somebody at DHS pulled out a map of what they call CHOMs, the community health analysis areas. And these are old cancer tracking maps from DHS. And they just so happen to have 126 CHOMs. So DHS being DHS, familiar with, decided to issue one license for a CHOM, 126. Who knows what you're going to do the other five? That was in 2011, 2000, August 2012, they were issued. Governor Ducey gets elected, and the DHS director, Will Humble, decides to take a job at the University of Arizona and something else. So the new DHS director comes in place. They throw out the CHOM system and decide that it must be. Of those 126 CHOMs, 99 were issued because like 19 were Indian reservations and they didn't want to take their licenses, and then the rest were not properly zoned. They were still proper zoning, so nobody could apply for a license. And something like 5 were just left out of the initial August 8, 2012 lottery when the winners were chosen way back when for each of those CHOMs. Right? So you had 99 issues, so you still have 27 CHOMs to be issued. So everybody was waiting for those CHOMs to be issued in 2013, 2014, 2015. Then the DHS decided in 2016, January 2016, to roll out the CHOM system. And then just to issue the remaining licenses, they just issued them on October 6th, I think it was, October 7th. I'm struggling on that day of the day. October 7th, 2016. So they just issued them. The application was due back in June. 2016. They issued the rest of the license throughout the CHOM system. They did it on a very convoluted process. They put all the details of it. I probably know it better than anyone else. I'll share it with you if you want to know more about it. If Prop 205 does not pass, the likelihood of more medical marijuana licenses being issued, I would say zero. I would say 1%. I mean, it fluctuates with the number of pharmacies that are out there. So you have 1,300 pharmacies, you have 130 dispensary licenses. What are the chances of there being another 100 Walgreens? Of course, you have Walgreens. So once there's 100 more Walgreens, at that point, 1,400, they then could issue 10 more licenses. I wouldn't hold your breath on any of that, because it's not likely that's not likely to happen. So Prop 205 passes, everything. But if Prop 205 doesn't pass, there's still a whole lot of different methodologies with which entrepreneurs can get into the market, ancillary businesses, medical lines. And I can talk to you about that in person sometimes, because what's happening is these things become like umbrellas. These dispensary licenses become like umbrellas. And edible lines are slipping in underneath them, subcontracting here. Grow operations are subcontracting. So you have these giant umbrellas being created with businesses. And that's another thing I specialize in. We can go through all the details of how that works, eventually hiring and serving and contract and all that stuff. But there are methodologies to get involved in the medical marijuana market should Prop 205 not pass. But that's why Prop 205 needs to pass, because it will create so much more economic opportunity in the licensing structures. There's tons of different new licenses created for everyone, including the right government just to issue as many licenses as it sees fit, which could be, it could be one, it could be many, many more. It is tied to liquor stores, though. It's one for every 10 liquor stores of the dispensary license. So that is actually a certain limitation that we believe is about 155 at this point. But the only reason we tied it to liquor stores was the political reasons. We were drafting the initiative. Wanted to say, hey, you know what? breakthrough eventually. Because, well, because, you know, when MPP was drafting the medical marijuana initiative, they said, we want our campaign to be, well, we're one-tenth the size of big pharma, right? So in the recreational thing, obviously the message is clear, and it's very common sense that marijuana is safe than alcohol. But we also wanted to show that there was one-tenth as many marijuana retail outlets as there were liquor stores. You know, so marijuana is one-tenth of the problem of alcohol. But it doesn't even compare. I mean, I'm an ex-prosecutor. I've read 5,000 police reports, 97% of which involve alcohol, you know, as about violent crimes, domestic violence, all that kind of stuff. You know, we can talk about advocacy stuff anytime on the ground. I love talking about that stuff. But, you know, marijuana, the only violent crimes involve marijuana where, you know, people getting rolled up in a car and shot in the desert. Trust me, the lawyers in this industry have made more than anyone. It's just incredible the number of lawsuits that are out there in this industry. But again, that's because of the structure that was created by the AMMA. These things are not for profits. That's something we're trying to get the government to address. I'm begging the government to set up a blue ribbon commission on medical marijuana policy and regulatory structures in Arizona so we can pass or fail Prop 205. So that we can get in there and solve some of these problems. So, yeah, feel free to talk to me about anything that stuff. I can go into great depth. Okay, any questions there? Any questions over here?
My question is there any concern for oversupply when we do this regulatory step? Is there anything in the supply? Because it seems like where there's no control, it is free enterprise, I understand. But, you know, as we open the gate, in these other states, we've seen, you know, the product wholesale value just tumble. I'm just wondering, should there be some kind of supply management?
You know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, you have medicine and technology here, who have experiences in every state. I just know Arizona. We're going to tell you about Arizona. But ask them. They can talk about the Colorado market and talk about what happens when it changes from medicinal to recreational. I can tell you all the business strategies of every dispensary here in Arizona and all the concerns with supply. So we have seen, but the concerns are for the dispensaries who are trying to make money. The consumer benefits, you know, oversupply means cheaper prices. You know, so what? You know, I'm a libertarian myself. If dispensaries and cultivations aren't making lot of money, that means the consumer and the patients in Arizona, the patients, have a cheaper supply of medicine. If Prop 205 fails, you will see the price of medicinal marijuana in Arizona plummet because of the amount of production that's going to be ready to get online. If it succeeds, it will maintain about the same, it will go up a little bit. During the transition period, but then in 2019, 20, and so on, people will go down. Now, that might seem like, okay, well, why don't I get involved in that business? Keep in mind, we have an entire country that's changing. Keep in mind that we have all these medicinal marijuana states. There's interstate regulation of medical marijuana coming, and I hope to lead the charge. I think, but I should talk about this. Lobbying. But one day the U.S. Congress is going to be regulating the interstate production of marijuana. If you have a lot of cultivation here in Arizona, and you have states coming online elsewhere, there's an opportunity to, you know, sell elsewhere. So people are just going forward.
A little bit operating in Colorado, as I'm sure you have heard, the price of marijuana is, let's just call it a free fall state. Colorado, state. In our example, I don't have people in the state of Colorado. My recreation, along with anyone else in the United States, is a hunter who's coming to our state to eat our state with it. So it's not supposed to. So that's a reality that I think anyone entering the state should be prepared for. Stay that way. As more supply comes to the market, the price will come down. Dimitri mentioned it's ultimately good for consumers, patients, whether they're on the correct side or the medical side, they shouldn't be cashing on the prices that they pay for those products. And so, I just a word of caution that we're seeing happen in our state, that our company brings in other consultants, is that cost of production is really what our focus is. We're focused on how cost effectively we produce, we finish, how high quality cannabis, and still have retail margins on that in our retail facilities and keep our business alive and operational. But I don't want to discount the fact that we are currently watching prices come down. I don't think we're close to the bottom of that market right now. I just believe that as that product becomes commodity, personal view, but it's also what we're seeing in the market. So,
as you're preparing your business plans for your startups, as you're preparing your business plans for the future, just recognize that. Understand that the regulatory aspects of the jurisdiction you're working in are extremely important. And have honest, genuine projections. It's not going to, the price per pound is not going to continue to go up. In Arizona, we're down to $1,400 to $2,000 on wholesale. Cultivation over to another dispensary. It was that you couldn't get a pound for $4,000 in the first month. So we put the first cultivation online, but all this product, everybody was buying it $4,000 a pound. And now it's dropped down. So if you plan your business around growth like that, but
had that answer, probably be getting paid a lot of money to write books and give lectures all over the world. We're not market analysts. We don't predict what type of stuff will happen. But we do rely on what has happened. decide is going to keep marijuana schedule as a Schedule 1. Personal assumption. As they try and allow for other entities, whether private or public or government, to actually do clinical research, clinical medical trials with cannabis, that we may start to see some progress with that. But because most major universities and medical schools have federal funding, they don't get into the actual cultivation and clinical research of cannabis because they don't want to jeopardize. So as a result, without a true medical third party information, way back to the FDA as to what medical value the plant may have, I don't think they found a reason as to why they should change. Now, we've also looked at legalization efforts around the country. There's no shortage of quick changing laws, whether medical or adult use, that happened very quickly and set up with 4 to 8 years. So we would anticipate that maybe there is a way that that catches up to the federal government, and they are able to reevaluate that classification sooner rather than later.
I have all these people joining us. You guys can pay online, by the way. Just kidding. But you know, I like to refer to that as the title. I'm a lobbyist now by trade, and you guys know what lobbyists do. We get involved. How marijuana is going to get reclassified, declassified, how it's going to get decriminalized at the federal level, and how it's going to be regulated interstate. And even then, when it's regulated interstate, how is it going to be enforced? Is the DEA going to become the regulatory enforcement agency to make sure the federal government collects its taxes that is transferred from state to state? I mean, these issues are real. They're going to be confronted by congressmen and U.S. senators over the next 10 years. That is the title fight of lobbying, how this whole industry is going to be regulated. If it was sent over to Schedule 2, there's a possibility that Big Pharma could come in like that. And so that's why a lot of people in the industry were celebrating the fact that it didn't get rescheduled to Schedule 2. While it would be better for consumers and patients, it's actually better for the industry that it stays like this. So that's a very complicated subject that no one truly has the answer to. But what I've found talking to politicians, lots and lots of politicians. They don't know what's going on. Not a lot of them have interest. That's why it's actually a concern of mine. And I'll say this publicly, that Hillary Clinton gets elected. Because who's Hillary Clinton going to turn to in regards to asking how marijuana policy should be regulated at the federal level? Is she going to turn to the mom and pop marijuana Colorado, Washington, Arizona? She's going to turn to those big, high-paid lobbyists that have supported her for many, many years. And what are they going to say? Who do they represent? You know, so no one knows what's going to happen. But I'm sure, I'm a lobbyist in the Arizona industry. I work for some mom-and-pop dispensaries. She's not going to listen to me. She's going to listen to some guy who's a D.C. lawyer who's been here $500,000 a year for the last 20 years. Who? Where's that money come from? Big Pharma. And absolutely. They're one of the big dogs. So that's a very interesting question. So remind the owner of this, I'm not sure what it is, get into Hillary Clinton's office quickly. Assuming she wins. No disrespect to Donald Trump. So another point, you got a lot of questions. That's one of the most fascinating. So, John Walsh, he said to me in a DC conference, a lot of promises are being made to the taxpayers about tax and regulating public benefit. But in order to have a successful tax and regulating market, you have to have a successful enforcement. Think about it, right? If everyone could sell alcohol, if you didn't have a liquor board, 29 AZ Pool certified liquor police in the state of Arizona to go regulate who sells alcohol and produces alcohol. Arizona would not recognize taxes on the alcohol sales. So he said, you know, in these future initiatives that are being created across Arizona, it's very important that the government officials and anyone writing the initiative process recognize that and make sure there's an enforcement provision to make sure that people who aren't selling marijuana, who shouldn't be selling marijuana illegally, aren't selling that marijuana illegally. So that also exists in Prop 205. If there's a provision in there for an enforcement provision to make sure that people within Arizona who are making this great compromise to tax and regulate under the prohibition do get their share. To that end, everyone can grow and consume and do whatever they want with six plants. That exists. It's like 12 plants per house or something like that. So there will be plenty of personal right to grow. I'm just telling you the truth. The reality of being able to sell it like a farmer's market is not going to exist. It will evolve in that direction, just as when like the price of marijuana drops, et cetera, over 10, 15 years. It will evolve in the direction. But at first, the way that the initiative was written to ensure the taxpayers of Arizona that it's okay to tax and regulate, because you're going to get taxes. And they will, you know, because there's an enforcement provision. And those individuals who want to grow, consume personally, that when they grow, they will be able to. Absolutely. There's no restriction that the city can put on the personal growth provisions of six plants. But the concept of people, if you're planning to grow six plants or 12 plants and then sell it, it's still going to be a violation. It's probably going to be even more restricted than before, because now there will be a specific enforcement provision that's out there that's going to ensure that the taxpayers get what they bargained for. Right? Is that crazy? Say this because we're trying to make compromises best for the state of Arizona, best for all the people of Arizona. If you're an illegal grower and your model is to grow at home and grow in a greenhouse and ship it out of state or sell it here in Arizona, you should hate legalization because it's destroying your business. And that's it's true. I mean, it is true. You know, I put a standing offer to anybody from the cartel who wants to fund me at $1 million, and I'll go to work. Opposed marijuana policy. Okay, we got $5 million. But they don't care. You know, the cartels are shifting over to other things. They don't even exist in Arizona. That's an entire myth. But so the people who are most upset about Prop 205 and legalization are those people who have been participating in the black market. American citizens. They went to high school with you and I. Their business model, their livelihood was to grow illegally in the greenhouse and sell sell it to their friends for $4,000 a pound. They don't have a little smoke themselves, not have to work, not have to pay taxes. It sucks for them. I'll be the first person to admit it. Everybody involved in the American marijuana industry should admit it. That person is the biggest loser in this whole legalization. And I wish the people opposing the adult use recreational movement would understand that, but they don't. You know, but we put, as we talked about, what happened in Colorado, the same thing's going to happen in Arizona. There are provisions in place to make sure the taxpayers get what they bargained for. Because that's the only way this is being legalized, is because the taxpayers are getting their fair share. There is no free the weed, you know, liberty reality that can exist in this pluralistic democratic society that we have in the United States. There just isn't.
There's no metric. It's not public record. It's not PRAT. The only comparison that I would draw is home brewing, because in marketplace for adults 21 plus. And I would argue that in most states, home brewing does not affect the legal alcohol market in those states. I don't believe that home growing for cannabis is going to affect the legal medical or adult use. It's just for individuals who want to take out that liberty. But if that data is not,
there's a lot of people who oppose legalization, and I think a lot of our growers are a little upset about what's going on. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, what is it they say? Because these are baby steps in the right direction that they want. Well, actually, illegal growers oppose marijuana no matter what, because it really screws up the business model. They'll pretend like, oh no, the economic structure that's being created for legalization of marijuana sucks. It's always going to change. It's going to evolve in time. So any step that further frees or creates liberty for individuals is a good step. It's a step in the right direction. That's why Prop 205, I'll be the first to admit, it's not perfect. What is perfect? Nobody knows. But it is creating more economic opportunity. It is creating a better form of access, not just for consumers, anyways, there's no access problem, but also patients. The price is just plummet for patients, which is fantastic in my book, because I'm a 100% advocate, bought, sold, behind the sneaker of medical marijuana. I used to think it was just something crazy for hippies to smoke pot, but it's not. Medical marijuana is awesome. Amongst us. No, but I mean, everything's taxed and regulated. There is no point. I mean, you can go to Mexico. You know, this is America, Right. There we go. There's a different form of not freedom. Exactly. Yeah, I always, when I imagine freedom, I think of Willy Wonka. How I wish I was Charlie and the chocolate.
Guys, we're going to try to stay on space. Sorry.
Metro, you have three plants in the vegetative form and three plants in the form of flower. That's kind of how they've broken that out.
We don't know what's going to happen in Arizona yet, but we'll talk later about that. I want to keep it on schedule. So, guys, thank you for having me up around. We have to say goodbye to the Facebook.
We can just take a 10-minute break. Help yourselves with water.